Welcome to the newest episode of On the Odd. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting it. Even a dollar would be appreciated. Things to come include new sticker designs, cheesy coffee mugs, and even soil samples from the Amityville Horror House here on Long Island. Yes, you heard me right. Please visit patreon.com/ontheodd.
From the paranormal to the extraordinary, from the weird to the wonderful, this is On the Odd.
Listening to On the Odd. Today we have a very special guest. He is an author, and his name is Stefanos Panagiotakis. He began his career as a radio officer in the Greek Merchant Navy in 1973, and he retired in 1998. From 1979 to 1981, he became a member of the Greek UFO team, and an independent reporter for the first Greek UFO magazine, which I'm not going to pronounce and butcher, which published only 15 issues from April 1980. Later that year, the UFO team Patheon became Team Sirius, and in March 1981, it published a new magazine entitled Astral Conduct. Stefanos Panagiotakis was appointed as a researcher and investigator of UFO cases outside of Greece. Your book is entitled The Road to Pascagoula, A Research Trip, 1981, which documents the story of Calvin Parker and the experiences that surround the area. I really want to just welcome you to the show and thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me, Stefanos. How are you?
Hello, Mark. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Anytime.
Just a small correction. The book is about Charles Hickson and not Calvin Parker.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Charles Hickson, yes. When I was there in Pascagoula, I met only Charles Hickson because Calvin Parker had many mental problems and he was isolated from all people.
Yeah. I just spoke to Calvin the other night, and I know that the way he dealt with the situation in Pascagoula was he just wanted his secrecy, his privacy rather. He wasn't interested in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
But so your story documents this experience that happened on October 11th, 1973, almost exactly 45 years ago.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that particular story?
I heard about this story on the Greek television the day after it happened in Pascagoula. I mean, on October 12th, as I watching the news on the television, they have this about Pascagoula. And I was very excited about this. It makes me feel very, very quite different. I knew so many things about the UFO phenomena and the abductees and all this stuff, but this was something different in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I always dreamed, how can I be there and have a meeting with Charles Hickson, or even to be there just to see the point. I don't know why. It's something attracts me all the time.
Mm-hmm. So there was something about this particular case that struck a nerve with you. You thought, this is different.
Yeah, I know. Probably there was something, how can I say it? It might be a very strong expression. It was, maybe this is planted somewhere in my soul or Charles Hickson's soul. I will let you know later. You understand why. On 1973, a few days after the happening in Pascagoula, I started my career as a radio officer. I went to my first ship to work there. The years passed, and about 98, by the end of 1980, I disembarked from a vessel and I stay at home for my vacation.
Hmm.
About April, end of April of 1981, I contact again with some companies, nautical, navy companies for working there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one, and they told me, Stefanos, you are scheduled to go to Singapore by early of June. And then
they made it
in Singapore. Yeah. Then they change it and they say you go by the first days of July of 1981. But suddenly, I signed a contract and I was ready and waiting for their call to get my tickets and fly to Singapore.
Okay.
Suddenly, the night of 24th, as I recall, of June, they call me immediately and tell me, Stefanos, please come tomorrow to our office because something's going to change. I've been there the early morning, the next morning, and they told me they scheduled for me to go immediately in Barcelona because the radio officer of one of their vessels was very sick. So he had to coming back in Greece, and the ship was ready to sail, and they needed a radio officer. I was the only available at the time, and I agree. I signed a new contract, which is in my book. There is a Philip Mandel put it in my book, my contract. And the next morning, I flew to Barcelona in Spain. I arrived there. I met the crew and the ship the next day, 26th of June, depart from Barcelona and has orders to proceed to Gibraltar and enter the Atlantic Ocean, waiting orders.
Wow.
The day we arrived in Barcelona, it came a very long telegram with all the loading ports in USA. And among these ports was Pascagoula. This is what happened.
And it's so ironic, right?
I can't believe it.
A light bulb went off in your head.
yeah. And I remember I said this in the foreword of my book. When I hand this telegram to my captain. He didn't know about Pascagoula. It was New Orleans in the schedule. It was Houston, Charleston, Norfolk, and finally New York. And he went up to the bridge where is the special books, where are all the ports of the world listed there. So opened the book, went to Pascagoula, and they discovered that Pascagoula is a small town about 130 miles from New Orleans, east of New Orleans.
Yeah.
I knew the city. I knew everything about Pascagoula. They didn't know. And I was laughing. And the captain says to me, Stefanos, why are you laughing all the time? Because, you know, the captain, the second captain, the chief officer, everybody's there. Even the chief engineer was on the bridge. And they tried to locate on the map, where is this Pascagoula? And I was laughing all the time. And then sometimes some of them became angry. Hey, why are you laughing all the time? You are from there? I said, no, I'm not from there, but I know what's there.
Right.
And they opened the map and they tried to look and to make the plans. And at that time, I was thinking about that there was another captain 8 years ago, before, mm-hmm. about 1973, who was in deep space and he's coming to Pascagoula. And he knew much better than my captain where he has to go and to approach, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
You understand what I
said? Yeah, it's amazing. So, I mean, it seems as though you were destined to end up at Pascagoula.
Yeah, this is something Charles Hickson explained to me. Then we passed the Atlantic Ocean, and our first loading port was New Orleans, We stayed there about 15 hours, and the next day we sailed for Pascagoula. The program, the schedule was to stay there for only 48 hours.
Oh, really? So you only had 2 days to do what you had to do.
Yeah. And I said to myself, Stefanos, at least you have the time to go and see the place where this...
And you're young. So you're able, you know, it's kind of like you're pretty much a kid, right? I mean, not a child, but you're like a teenager. Well, how old are you here?
30.
Oh, okay. I was born. You're still now a kid. I'm in my 40s, so 30 is still a kid.
I am not a kid. I'm 67 years old.
No, I mean then.
Ah, then, yes.
Yes.
Then. I was about 30. I was born 51. It was 81. I was 30 years old, 30 and 2-3 months.
So, I mean, you could go and, like, not sleep, you know? It's like you're going to spend 48 hours trying to get done what you want to get done.
But, you know, I told you that there are many, many, many things which control all this situation about me.
Right.
And the coincidence were something very, very strange. Because when we arrived there, in Pascagoula, they had a problem with the cargo, and they say, you're going to stay 1 week.
Right.
We arrived at 15th of July, and we're scheduled to depart 22. So I have a whole week to do my job.
Oh, wow. I mean, you totally lucked out.
Yes. I was a researcher for the Greek team named Sirius. And... then I decided to do some things. What these things are? Okay, I can tell you. First of all, to go to this place and in the Sopater shipyard and see where this abduction occurred. Mm-hmm. Occurred. Then I will try to see some local people there and speak to them, ask them their opinion, and nothing more, because I said to myself, Stefanos, you are not a researcher, a real researcher like the other one, who have already written many, many books, and they are well known all the world, and they have instruments and all this stuff. I didn't have nothing, only a small tape recorder and a very, very cheap photo camera.
Right. But that's all you need. All you need is the research, you know. The person is the book, you know.
Yeah. And when we arrived there, I was another gift from God. I don't know from where. A friend of chief officers was from Greece. And when we arrived there, this guy, Makis, 30 years old at the time, mm-hmm. he came on board and he met our chief officer, Dimitris. And they make hugs and, well, you're my friend. I have to save you so many years, because this guy, Makis, was a neighbor of Chief Officer, and also a neighbor of me, because I was lived there in the same place of Athens, but I didn't knew him. And
small world, you know.
I was in my cabin after we berthed in the dock. Mm-hmm. Of Pascagoula, I was in my car, and I heard this voice. I heard Greek people speaking, and the voice of this guy is a voice I never heard in this ship. So I opened the door and I saw this scene, and I said, "What's going on here?" And Dimitris told me, "This is Makis from our country." Mm-hmm. Makis, and he's working as a ship sandler there, make provisions for ships, you know.
Yes.
And he came on board. Just to ask captain if he needs some fruits and food and this stuff, you know. So he met Dimitris, and I met him, and we know, okay, he said, guys, I have a car, and tonight I will take you out in Pascagoula, and so on, and this stuff. And
so that's amazing, in Pascagoula, you have all these connections that are coming together.
Yeah. And now there are more to come. After this guy left, I went also in my cabin, and then it was time for a coffee. It was, I think, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. In the ships, we drink coffee. It's a coffee time. So I went down for my coffee, and nobody was there. Everybody's were on deck and working. And I saw a guy, Mr. It was, I don't remember his name now. And he's waiting also for the captain to wake and to wake up, because during the noontime, we Greeks used to sleep.
Like a hour, siesta. You
know. That, you know the word, siesta.
Yeah.
So he was getting for the captain about this, and I saw this guy, and I was very curious, Pascagoula, and you know how I felt. I say, hey, hi, how are you from here? He said, no, I'm not from here. And I asked, you know about this Pascagoula incident in 1973 with two fishermen? They abducted by a UFO for a half an hour or an hour. Yes, I know everything. What do you want?
I said, what?
I am a researcher. I want to go out and see. Oh, okay. I have a very good friend of mine, and I will send you there, and then he will tell you what to do next. And this is how it all started, my friend.
That's amazing. You know, it feels like all the chips fell perfect. You know, everything was aligned.
Yeah. He make a phone call to this guy, Mr. Fred Ross, and talk him about me. And the same afternoon, I went out to the city by a taxi. I went to Mr. Fred Ross' home. I knocked the door. He opened the door. He was surprised so much. A Greek researcher here? Oh, my God, I can't believe it.
In Mississippi?
Mississippi. After 88 years after this incident, what's going on? I said nothing, just it was my time to come here. So he welcomed me in his home, and we talked about, he did knew many things. While the incident happened, he was making his service in another part of USA. I don't remember.
Okay.
It was written in my book. You can find it there.
Yes.
But he was a native of Pascagoula. He is a citizen. And he told me about this. He has seen Mr. Charles Houston sometimes, who is a good man. He said to me, Stefanos, I believe it completely. There is no hoax. They didn't lie and all this stuff. And I said to him, okay, Mr. Fred Ross, can you tell me what to do next? I have plenty of time. Besides to go and see the place, what else can I do? And he told me, you can go to the local newspaper, Mississippi Press, and ask there for... to find the responsible reporter of this incident. Probably he will help you.
Wow.
And that's what I do. The next day, I went there. I knocked the door. I say, hello, I want to speak with someone who was in charge for this report. And the lady told me about Mr. Don Brodas. Don Brodas. I went to his office. He was typing at that time. I say, hello, sir. I put my ID card. Says about I was a researcher from Greece. He took out his glasses. She stood up and say, what? From Greece?
Well, that's the thing. Yes. It's unexpected. You know, if you hear that somebody, I'm from another country and, you know, I want to do this research, it's automatically like, all right, well, this is important. Like, you know, this is a big deal. I mean, you traveled a far distance for this story.
Yeah. But from Greece is a small country. There are not any researchers or, you know,
they're not known for that.
Or clubs about UFOs. He knew nothing. He knew only about Parthenon and the Spartans and Leonidas, you know, this ancient story. What is Greek? And he was amazed about this. He said, you are from Greece? I can't believe it. Oh, my God, I want to help you a lot, and I will help you. This is what he told me.
Wow.
Mr. Don Broa, he's dead now, and he's not living anymore. He was also an old man at the time.
I see.
And then he said to me, okay, I say, where can I find copies of your newspaper of that day and the next day and all this stuff? And he handed to me a book, like a book, a booklet, let's say, where there were all the how can I say it in English?
Like an archive or the microfiche?
Yes, all the archives about Pascagoula. The front pages, this is what I want to say. The front page, you know,
I see.
Of their newspaper and all this stuff. And he said to me, okay, take this. I said, I have to go also to the National Library and check the any other newspaper. He told me, it's only one paper, newspaper here, Mississippi Press, but you can go there. But this is what I give you. It has everything. Wow. And he told me, okay, now I have to go at home and I will meet you here about 1 o'clock in the afternoon after my lunch. And then I left, went out, went to to Wendy's.
We have a Wendy's here.
Yes, with my friend. But the Greek escort me, the Greek friend from Pascagoula, the ship's under, Makis. He came with his car and he take me to Mississippi Press. And then we went to Wendy's. We also ate and then we came back to Mississippi Press. And then Don, he gave me a paper with many names on it. And he told me, okay, check some of these and you can go and meet them. But the most important I had to do for you, because from Greece and I like it very much, I will try to contact Charles Hickson and arrange an interview with him.
Wow.
You know.
You must have just thought, oh my God, are you serious?
Yes, yes. I have just found the right man.
Now, of course, I just want to mention that Charles Hickson was the other person involved in the Pascagoula phenomenon. I don't really even know what to call it, experience or event. And he was, you know, he's more open, of course, than Calvin Parker. Calvin Parker just came out with his story. Yeah.
He cannot accept this story. And after a few days, he collapsed. And that's all.
Yeah. But, you know, later, he didn't want this. You know, neither one of these men had any interest in UFOs, really, beforehand, right? I mean, Charles Hickson didn't really have, you know, they were fishermen. They were just out there fishing.
Very simple men, yes.
Yeah, simple men, exactly.
He never, he didn't know nothing about this. Nothing, right. Absolutely nothing. He liked to live his life down in the south, you know.
Yeah.
It's quite different there. People, very simple people. I met them. I saw them, how they live and all this stuff. And there are some important things that can transmit to the other man that they didn't lie. They live it.
Mm-hmm.
What they experienced was real, absolutely real, not hallucination, not a whole, you know.
I believe it wholeheartedly that what they saw is really what they saw. Like this, the story, it is solid. It has not changed over 45 years. And I think that, so what happened? He said that he was going to reach out to Charles Hickson.
Yes.
And so what was the next step from there?
The next step was the fall, this one.
Your book just sounds phenomenal. I mean, I just want to mention it again. It's The Road to Pascagoula, A Research Trip, 1981. I love the cover. The cover has photographs of you and I believe with, is it Don Brodus as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the upper side is Don Brodus. Down is with Charles Hickson.
And it's you. And you're a kid. you have the big early 80s hair and it's just it's just really cool. You have a cassette tape and it just looks and sounds like a fascinating story. I just wanted to mention that again, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to mention again, if you're looking for your next book, definitely pick up The Road to Pascagoula, A Research Trip.
Yes, the Greek in Greece, I published it in a magazine in a series of six issues. The name goes From Pascagoula to Revelation.
Wow.
It was the title I get. But this title, The Road to Pascagoula, is Philip Mandel's suggestion, and I accept it.
I love it. Philip is such a nice guy, too. I had him on the show just a couple of weeks ago. Such a great guy, a real straight shooter.
And then I will let you know how he discovered me and for what reason he wanted to make this small book available to the public, because there are some very, very, very unknown details which I write down without having any knowledge that these details were unknown up to this time. Even today, they knew nothing about this.
And this is still, this is 8 years after it happened.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a, yes. You know, it's far enough. I mean, because the Pascagoula event was a pretty big story. Clearly, you heard about it in Greece. But in the States, it was a really, really big story.
And very well covered. Very well covered.
Yes, it was very well covered. And I think that's one of the reasons why Calvin Parker got afraid of it. Because he's like, I don't want to, you know, I don't need to be in front of the camera. You know, he got very shy about it and he ran from it. You know, I think a lot of people might. Like you said, they were simple men. And clearly, Charles Hickson, I think, dealt with it better. He was older as well.
Of course, he was older, 42 was years like old at the time.
Yeah, Calvin was an 18-year-old kid.
18, yes, yeah, a teenager.
But it's amazing, you know.
You know what I fish from Pascagoula? First of all, it's not that I met Charles Hickson. The most important is what happened 1 day, 2 days before.
And what's that?
I met another witness that nobody knew at the time. And he was a Greek one.
Really?
He saw the UFO moving toward the shipyard at the same time. Can you believe this?
Did he see the same UFO? Or was it a part of the...
Yeah, he saw the same, exactly the same, because the time fixed exactly with the time Charles and Calvin were fishing there. That's what Philip Mandel became crazy about this. Wow. I said, I can't believe it. You caught such a nice fish and nobody knew at the time. And then we decided to make a book. Besides, the meeting with Charles Hickson was something different because many people, many reporters spoke with him, with this man, but only in a limited of questions about the happening, you know, about the incident. Mm. But I spoke with Charles Hickson about everything except the incident. And then I learned many, many details about the future, the shape of things to come, and not only. You know, this interview is much, much different than the usual ones we know about. The things I knew was only Alan Hynek knew about.
Really? Nobody.
But this is what I tell you before, that Charles Hickson waiting a sign from Greece. And when they knock the door and he's and Charles and Don Brodas said to his family that someone from Greece want to see Charles Hickson, everything is changed there. Charles Hickson at the time was in New Orleans.
Wow.
I have to tell you this. After he, I met Don Brodas, he take us, he went to his director and say, I need a small leave for 4 or 3 hours for this reason. And he said, okay, go with the man, everything he wants about me, he means. So we took his car and we went straight to Charles Hickson's house.
Wow. Just you like know. That.
And when we are on the road, he showed me the place where the Greek witness saw the craft moving toward to Pascagoula, to Sopater shipyard, but I will tell you about this later. Mm-hmm. After now we arrived there in his place, which name Gautier. It's just outside Pascagoula, is where the late Charles Hickson lived. And as we arrived there, we go down and knock the door. Don knocked the door and open was. A lady came out, was Charles Hickson's wife, Mrs. Blanche Hickson. And he said to her, this man is from Greece and going to meet to see your husband. And she was very, you know,
Yeah, like who
embarrassed
like,
about this? Well, again, not a man from Greece. What's going on here? What he wants from my husband? And Don explained he must see his husband. He came from Greece, from very far away. And she said to him, okay, I will waiting for Charlie to come from his work. You know, release about this afternoon, late afternoon. And he said to me, okay, son, you can call me tomorrow and I will let you know when you meet Charles Hickson. And Don Broda said, okay, don't call. He don't have to call you. I will call you, Blanche. And she said, okay, Don, call me tomorrow and I will let you know about. So then we left from there. We went back to Pascagoula, and this is how the day finished. The next day, I saw again the man who told me about the first citizen of Pascagoula. I told you before, Mr. Fred Ross, Billy Rope. I don't remember his name now. Billy was his name, yes.
Okay.
And say, hey, Stefanos, what happened yesterday? I said to him, okay, I went to your friend, and then today I went to Don Broda's and all this stuff. Hey, and he said to me, okay, I know about. And what did Don Broda say to you? I say, he told me, he gave me a paper with some names on it, so I have to check. But the most important is try to get to fix a meeting with Charles Hickson. He took the paper from me and checked it. He said, I know this man, E.P. Sigalas. I say, yes, this is most probably be a Greek man. He said to me, I don't know, but he's living in the same road with me. So I can, yes, I will write you down, make on a paper, I write you where he lives exactly and all this stuff.
Like a map,
a small map, yes. I draw a small map on a paper. And he made this and he told me, okay, go and meet this man because they say that this guy was with Don Broda's cousin on the same car.
Yeah, it's like a movie. It's like you meet one person and it turns to another one and another one and another one.
Yeah. Like a chain, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So, to make a long story short, I went the next morning and to Mr. Sigala's home. I ring the bell. Nobody answered. It was 5 o'clock. And the taxi driver told me, okay, Stefanos, because everybody knew about me in the cab station. And they helped me a lot. Pascagoula cab station, something like this. Pascagoula taxis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the woman, the driver, told me, Stefanos, they usually come from the works about 5:30. So you can come with me, and I have another customer to go somewhere else to get a man. And you can come with me on the front seat, and then we be back here again. So I was with Mr. Bertil Moore. Was her name, the taxi driver.
Mm-hmm.
And he also told me about the story he has, and he was she was ashamed to say to anyone else. But she opened her mouth to me. And wow. He told me that what happened to her 2 days after the Pascagoula incident, because she saw the very same craft that was reported to abduct Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker. So I had another story in my hand.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She was at home 2 days after the incident. Okay. And the neighbor knocked the door very, very furious and say, hey, Bertil, come out. They went out and she said to her, look up there. And they saw a blue light. You know, it was a craft with very bright blue light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hovering over their home about 1,000 feet, something like this. And then the craft moved again and toward Mobile. Mobile is a city after Pascagoula to the east. And But she never tell anyone about this.
Really?
Only the neighbor knew. No, she never. The first time told it was me. And he asked me, she was very angry. Say, what they don't explain to us? What's happening? I know this man, the fisherman. They didn't lie. I know everybody say the same thing. Nobody blame them. They accept the story. I say, I don't know why. And she make some questions why they don't sell to us. Maybe these aliens are... Aggressive and hostile. I said, don't be afraid. I don't think so. They are so much civilized compared to us. So I think that it's not a sci-fi film like Alien or all this stuff, you know.
Right.
Yeah, this is my belief. These are my beliefs. Anyway.
I believe it can go one way or the other, I think. I think just like us, we don't know. Well, you know what? We just don't know. But I don't think we should jump to conclusions and say, you know, well, they're here for terrible things.
Yeah. They say in Hollywood, I can't believe what they say in Hollywood with all these films with the bad guys, they come in from space and invade Earth and took our lives and all this. I can't accept this.
It makes,
anyway.
You know, it makes money and they just push it. So, you know, so here's the thing. You did all this research and then... You didn't, were you going to put it out? I mean, when did you put out the magazine? Because you said you released this book in a form of a magazine, 6 issues?
Yes, only 6 issues.
When the did magazine, you do that?
About the end of 81. After with Pascal Gula, I was on board and every day I write. I heard the tapes, I made the recordings, and I wrote all the story. And I said to them by... mail, and they start to publish it each month.
I see.
Because there weren't any money to make it a book, you know.
Yeah. So this stuff remains.
Yes, it goes buried for 37 years. And the man who opened the grave was Philip Mandel. And, you know, it was, I say, the book was buried like a dead. Nobody knew about this.
Wow.
And Philip Mandel, when discovered me, say, okay, open the grave.
Now, did you, at the time, did you try to reach out to Kevin Parker or did you just decide to leave him alone?
I will tell you this. When I was with Charles Hickson, he told me about Calvin Parker. And I say, he asked me, you going to see Calvin Parker? I say, so much, Charlie. And he told me, it's impossible, Stefanos. Because this man is out of this world now. I worry about him and, you know, all this. But the truth was this, Mark. Charles Hickson was like a wall who protects this man from reporters, from researchers, from anyone. And he said to anyone that Calvin Parker is seriously damaged.
Well, I think it took him a long time to come around, and like I said, I spoke to him just a few days ago, and he's a very, very pleasant person, very friendly person.
Fantastic.
And we had a lovely talk about fishing, and we had a lovely talk about cooking. I think that he doesn't even now it was cathartic for him to write the book, but it wasn't. He still doesn't really want any spotlight. And I believe he wants to vanish again. I don't think he wants to even speak with me about it. You know, I think he's really happy being himself and being with his family.
Yeah, yeah. That proves how real is their story.
Right. Because why make up a story that you don't even want the attention from when everybody wants to hear your opinion of it?
Maybe... the orders from up there are.
they. I think they scared the crap out of them. You know, it's like they really, really.
Yes, there's crap about men, but maybe he gets the message of okay, Calvin, stay calm, don't open, and when the time comes, everything will be revealed. This is what Charles Hickson told me all the time that night. I stayed with him 3 hours, and he kept telling me, Stefanos, I am in contact with creatures. They speak to me like I have a receiver in my mind and I get their messages. And they calmed down me all the time and say, Charlie, calm down. When the time comes, we will tell you, and then you go to the national television network and you say everything to the people. They must be prepared. But not now, not now. There must be some things might happen and after this. And this is what he told me, and many, many other things. I didn't like to hear about the incident. I just asked me to tell me about 10 minutes, no more, what happened when they get there, inside there. It was the well-known story. Mm-hmm. But the most important for me is to know the man and see the man and what he believes now, 1981, not now.
Yeah, what no, I understand.
Yes, 8 years after, and to see how he lives and what happens. And he told me things that he published it in his book 2 years later. I knew before. 2 years before, I knew that he had contact with the creatures 2 times.
Hmm.
One in 1974 and another, I don't remember, in 1975. The creatures came back to him, and the first time he wants to go with them. You know, he opened his car to go out, and his family grabbed him and kept me in his car.
Really?
He heard a voice in his mind say, "Never mind, Charlie. Another place, another time."
Now, and did Charles ever talk about? Did Charles Hickson ever talk about any missing time outside of? The main experience?
I don't think so. They have a missing time. Okay. It's only 1 hour. Calvin Parker, the only difference is that Calvin Parker saw a creature, not only the robots. There are 3 robots which came out of the craft and abduct them and grab them and get them inside the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Hickson saw only these 2 creatures, which is responsible for him. They took him inside and put it suspended in the air and all this stuff. But he never told us about any creature. Calvin Parker saw a female one.
Mm.
He was very angry with her. They have near a fight, but she calmed him down and say, "Okay, Calvin, we don't want your to hurt you."
Right.
And all things went well. They took him very politely and take him out of the craft. But Charles Hickson says that when the one robot grabbed Calvin Parker, he fainted out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what we knew up to the book of Calvin Parker. We thought about that the man didn't experience nothing except when see the creatures coming to him and the creatures living on the bank of the river, and nothing inside the craft, only a few memories, you know.
Yeah.
Because everybody thought that Calvin Parker was something like dead, you know.
Yeah, he got off the map, off the
Yeah.
But you know, have you returned to Pascagoula since 1981?
No, it was impossible. Mm-hmm. How to get there, and to be there was a gift from God. You know,
sure.
With the ship, it was impossible. The tickets cost a lot of money, but there was any reason to go there.
It was also Hickson summer, right? It was like the middle of July.
Yeah, like the tropics. No, it's Caribbean there.
That's
like
a Mississippi
Caribbean
heat.
Very, very bad. I mentioned this in my book many, many times when I was out. You know, it's like my book is like a log. You know, the log of a radio officer, but a different log. You know,
yeah.
What doing every day with details, and all the time I mentioned how hot was out there. Very hot, very hard to live. I know how these people live there.
Yeah, it's, you know, unless you're there for like a month, you don't get adjusted. You know, it takes a really long time to adjust. And like I know I'm on Long Island in New York, and if I go down to Florida, like I'm dying. I'm dead. I feel like yeah. I'm going to die in like 2 or 3 days, but then you adjust to it a little bit. But the Mississippi is a different, whole different thing. It's hot. Yeah.
They had the river there, you know, very hot, very excess humidity, mm-hmm. about 100% every day.
Yeah.
And rain, you know, rain all the time, hurricanes and all this stuff.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. And the people who are there, they love it, though. So, you know, they just love it.
And they used to live there. They born there, you know.
Yeah. So when Calvin Parker came forward with his story, when he finally broke his silence, how did you feel? What was your opinion of that?
A friend of mine came on Facebook and told me, Stefanos, Calvin Parker released the book. I said, I don't believe it. How come this? So I went, he gave me a link. So I went to this link and I see Philip Mandel's advertisement on this book. And I wrote down, say, hey, Calvin, I am Stefanos. You don't know me, but I was there 1981 and I met Charlie Hickson. And I write a small book about my experience there. And I'm glad you are back at the world. And I'm gonna buy your book. And all this stuff. And Philip Mandel saw this. And this is how he discovered me.
Wow.
You saw my mention on Facebook. And the next day he replied to me, hey, Stefanos, you have a book about Pascagoula and all the stuff. Then we went to Skype and we talked about this. And he can't believe it. Say, okay. Just tell me about the Greek witness. It's very important for us. So I write down this part of the book with the interview with Mr. Sigalas, and I send it to Philip, and Philip published it to other magazines. And then one day say to me, Stefanos, would you like to translate the book in English and I will publish it? I say, okay.
That's awesome.
So the whole September I start to translate the book. It's very hard because it is very easy from English to translate in Greek. Very, very easy. But from a Greek text to make it in English was very hard for me because my English are very limited. Mm. So I wanted to use the good parts of your language with idioms and all this stuff, but I didn't know nothing. So I said to Philip, please, you got to help me about this. I will send you the text and then you must make a proofreading about the book because I see that Calvin Parker's book was raw because Calvin wanted his book to be by his words. And they speak very, very, very different down in South. And also Calvin's knowledge is not so much, you know. So it was very hard to understand what Calvin says, even you Americans. It was in some parts very, very hard to understand. But Calvin wants this to remain as he speaks to the other. You know, it looks like when you read the book, it is like you have Calvin by your side. But my book, it's going to be very, very, it's another story. So Calvin, Philip asked from two proofreaders and they make the corrections. 80% of the book was my English. But the 20% was the salt on the food, you know, made it much better.
But, you know, like Philip Mantel, he's from the UK. So there's a whole other aspect of it, right?
Yeah, because, English also. Because I can understand the Americans, but English, it's very, very hard.
Because, you know, we all have our own slang. You know, the South. The South is all, you know, it's like 90% slang.
Yeah. And yeah, he had a problem with Calvin, very, very.
I know, I heard about it.
Now imagine Stefanos, 30 years old, with much limited knowledge of the language, to be in Pascagoula. And I made it. This is what I said to Philip. You see, mate, I've been with Charles Hickson. I was 3 hours there. I was with Sigalas at other 2 hours. And Don Brodans and many people there, and I didn't have any problem. They understood me. Okay.
You got the story. That's all that matters, right?
So I didn't mention nothing about Peter Sigala's interview, but I think it's much better to leave it for the readers to read what the man said to me and even what Charles Hickson said to me. There are many, many details. Even they will know for the first time what was the reason that killed Barney Hill, the husband of Betty Hill.
Yeah, Betty Hill. Yeah, I spoke to her niece.
Yes, Yeah, okay. They know about the heart attack, but they did know the real reason. I have it in my book. It was something that Charles Hickson told me. And he didn't say to anyone except Alan Hynek. No one else knew why Barney Hill died, by what reason he died. And some other very good things inside there. And I also, before, I don't know, the time is to finish now or not.
Yeah, we could start finishing up. You know, I'm loose. You know, it's we're still under an hour.
Okay, yeah, we are now. That's why. And also, there was a detail I learned there. While I was heading, the day I was heading with the taxi for Charles Hickson home, mm-hmm. I told you that he lives in a place outside Pascagoula named Gautier.
Gautier.
It's probably a French name.
Gautier. Yeah, like Jean-Paul Gautier.
Well, yes, something like this.
Yeah.
And when as we passed through the roads, the taxi driver told me, "You see this home, this house?" I say, "Yes." What's going on? You know who here born a very famous actor of Hollywood? I say, "Who?" And she told me, "Richard Dreyfuss." Can you make a connection to your now?
Well, because of the Closing Encounters.
Who play on the Close Encounters?
Yeah,
on the third
Richard Dreyfuss.
This is the genius of Steven Spielberg. Because Steven Spielberg approached Charles Hickson to make Pascagoula a film. He told me also. And Charles Hickson refused because he says, "This is not science fiction. It's a real story, Steven Spielberg. So I don't want to make this film because you have to put it in the category of science fiction. And my story is a real story, not a fiction." And Steven Spielberg made speechless about this and say, "Okay, Charlie, it's okay." Then later,
that's amazing.
He made Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Based off of Pascagoula, or inspired by it.
Yes, and Richard Dreyfuss was born in Gautier, where Charles Hickson lives. It's a very...
You can see it. You can see, like, how the story came about, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I like Steven Spielberg a lot. I think that he takes these, even though they're released as fiction and they're fictionalized, he has, I believe, at least back then, he had a lot of respect for actual entities. And, you know, I would have loved to have seen Spielberg tell the story, to be honest with you. I wonder where it would have gone.
Steven Spielberg, if he never made Jaws, he will be very, very hard condemned about Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm.
But because he became famous, he was a brand new but very strong name in Hollywood.
It was the whiz kid. It was the new big thing.
They were ready to punish him about Close Encounters, the American CIA on all this.
Sure.
Yes, because he said too much. Of course, they were covered, but he opened our eyes, our minds about the phenomena of UFO. And later he made E.T. It was... also in a smooth story about E.T., for he involved little boys and girls. And after, he made a very, very good series, Taken.
I never saw Taken. No, I never saw it.
You have to, man.
Really? Hold on.
You have to. Oh, don't leave it behind.
I did. It's ironic. I have a 10-year-old son. And I watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Here in Taken.
And he loved it. So maybe Taken might be good too.
It's 10 hours, fantastic. Because 95% of this is real stories, you know. It's the real story. The stories we read every day in the books. Starts from Roswell. And I don't know where it leads the story up to our days. But he passed all this stuff easily to our ears and our minds and open our minds about this. He can tell.
I just want to ask you one quick question, Stefanos. Now, yes. Before all this happened, before you took a trip or even joined the military, were you involved in UFO, the history of UFOs? Like, did you follow this? And did you ever have your own personal experiences, even paranormal experiences?
No, I didn't have nothing at all up to 1979.
Wow.
I have my first contact with other guys on board the ship in the middle of the ocean. Just not in the middle, just a few hours before enter the Caribbean. Mm. We're coming from Belgium, Antwerp, and we're heading for Mexico. So the day we leave the Atlantic Ocean and enter the Caribbean waters, 60 miles before Puerto Rico, in the afternoon, we saw a UFO craft. It was a UFO.
And did it blow your mind? Like, I mean, you see this?
Of course, of course. Yes, it was a fantastic experience. I was in the radio, and suddenly became so much static in the radio, I cannot hear nothing. But I would stay there, and then someone knocked the door. It was the captain, and said to me, "Stefanos, please, can you come to the bridge immediately?" I said, "What's going on, captain? Come and see something." I went out, and he was with the chief officer and two seamen. And they look up the sky, and I saw a bright light, a very bright red light. It was about 3,000 to 4,000 feet high up there. I say, "Okay, captain, maybe it's an airplane or something like this." "Yes, but red?"
"Yeah."
"What is this red color?" "And flickering red." I say, "There are the heading lights, but it's not moving. It stopped there." I said, "Okay, I look. And then suddenly it dived down. The craft is dived down toward our vessel.
Oh, my God.
And yes, and it stopped about 1,500 feet before the vessel. And then we saw it clear. It was bright light. It was silvery, oval-shaped, and with bright, very bright red light. And there were this light, when it stops up to us, above us, start flickering the lights, flickering. And then I felt I was nearly dead, believe me, because I was afraid so much.
Did you hear anything? Were there any sounds?
No, absolutely nothing.
Wow.
And how can I say the word? In half a second or less, it disappeared.
Oh,
it
wow.
made a zap. And went toward the west, where it was a time that the sun is setting, and we ran to the other side of the bridge, and we didn't say nothing.
It so there was only two other people saw this.
Four. We
went four. Yeah. What did everyone say? Were they panicking? Were they thinking we're being?
Everybody. Our hearts beating very fast.
Sure.
We are afraid, but the captain knew a lot about the UFOs. And many times during the night in his cabin, we spoke about. And, he accepted. He said, "Stefanos, we saw a UFO." It was not a UFO. It was a spacecraft. It was not man-made. It's from outer space. And the same night, we have also another very big encounter about midnight. The first encounter, that one I told you now, it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We entered the Caribbean, we passed Puerto Rico, and we were near the Virgin Islands. I went to bed about 11:30, and at 10 minutes after 12, they knocked my door and said, it was a seaman. I say, "Mister, can you come to the bridge? The second officer wants to see you. There is something outside."
Oh, no.
I say, "No, not again."
Yeah, exactly. You're like, "Oh, yeah. No, not again. I just want to get some sleep."
Yeah. I went out, and I didn't see nothing. It was heavy rain. The clouds were very, very low above the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And heavy rain, the tropical rain. And The second officer, he goes with his wife and the seaman who knocked my door, who came to my cabin. And I say, what is, the name is Zakaria. Hey, Zakaria, I say, what's going on? Hey, Stefanos, we saw three points, let's say points of light passing over the ship and go up to the sky. But right. Very low. You know, because my English are limited, I can't discuss. You saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Yes.
Okay, you have seen. Okay, you remember when the lady looking for her baby,
mm-hmm.
and the baby went to the in a road, and she is looking for, and it was also Richard Dreyfuss there, and suddenly pass three bright objects. You remember?
Right, came like really, really fast. Like
yes,
just,
you remember the last one, a red one, mm-hmm. like a ball, a small ball.
Yeah,
yeah. This is what they saw. Zachariah told me I saw three balls of bright light, a white light.
Wow, like an orb or something.
Yes,
But energy, like energy.
Like energy, yes. I tried to see though. After 20 minutes, I saw by my own eyes. They passed again, but they came from the sky, up in the sky, passed through the clouds, above our vessel, and go in an east direction, and we lost them. And after 5 minutes, it came back, and they wake up to the sky. To make a long story short, after an hour, they keep dancing. We call it dance. They keep dancing, passing above us, went up to the sky, and then suddenly appeared again after 10 minutes and went, on the...
That's amazing.
On the horizon, lost on the horizon.
Yeah, it just kind of went. It just vanished.
It was like diving in the sea. See, this is what reminds me. Because they go down to the sea and no see us, but the earth is round. That's why we lost contact. And suddenly, about an hour after an hour, the seaman was a man from Ghana, a black man, Arthur, and said to me, "Mister, look up in the sky." And we look up there, and we saw. A big craft. It was a very big craft, just behind the clouds.
Bigger than your ship, like really big.
Yeah, much bigger than our ship. It was a mother ship. It's very, 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 very long, about, I don't know, you have feet, we have meters.
No, but I understand meters.
Okay, meters, it was about, let's say, 150, 200 meters.
Wow, that's like 600 feet.
Two times our vessel.
Wow.
It was round, and we see only lights on the perimeter, bright lights circling around the perimeter of the craft. Nothing else. And I say, hey, guys, this is a mother vessel, a mother ship.
Then did that ever get reported? Did you...
I went to the VHF and I called the Virgin Islands station. Nobody answered. Heavy static because of the rain or because of the craft up there. Very heavy traffic. I went to the radio room to call, to make a general contact to the vessels around. Nothing. Very strong static.
Amazing.
We cannot hear nothing. Absolutely nothing. And suddenly, after 10 minutes, we saw this. A bright light, a spotlight came from the middle and covered our vessel. And the night became day.
It's amazing.
And the whole crew wake up. Everybody's wearing their cabin and slept, they are sleeping. And they wake up by the light. They thought it was day, it was the sun.
It was that bright. Wow.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see about 25 people coming on the bridge, looking up in the sky.
Like, what the hell's going on? Yeah.
And the captain also, and say, "Captain," I say, "this is what's going on here." And we are afraid, very, very afraid. We have only one wife, the second officer wife. She started to cry. She was afraid. She said, now this is the end. Maybe they hit us with a bomb or put fire on the vessel and all this stuff.
Well, who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, but the guys up there just looking. They were
just observing. Yeah,
yeah, the searchlight is not circling. It was light, a straight light on the vessel. And about 10 minutes, and then disappeared. It went out, the light. But the craft was up there, remaining there. All the people was upset. What's going on here? What is this? But most of them, they cannot accept the word a UFO or
a they space. Immediately say it had to have been something else.
Some of them, they say it is a sign of God. The other said that the Americans, they have secret weapons. And Captain told me, okay, Stephen, let them believe what they want, because it's much better to not put fresh ideas in their minds, because they become crazy. How can I explain to a people from Pakistan or from Africa that this is space people up there in a craft?
Right.
So we say to them, yes, probably it's God and Allah.
Yeah, whatever makes them happy.
Well, yes, right. And so everybody went back to their cabins, and the craft, after about half an hour, slowly disappeared. And this is the end of the story. But during that time, Mark, numerous crowd of these small spheres, you know, spheres,
right?
The balls come and go from the vessel.
Just kind of traveling around it?
Yeah. But they come in from somewhere from the south, from the east, and passing over our vessel, and then go up to the vessel, to the spacecraft. They pass through the clouds and where to the... And then they come and go. This is what can I say for the people to understand what I say. They come and go, come and go, come and go all this time. Like, I call it a space dance, like dancing. I don't know what these items were. I don't know. And then the vessel disappeared, and this is the end of the story.
Yeah.
The next day, Captain make a contact with Puerto Rico, and they send a telegram to our office in Greece and to the harbor master of New York and all this stuff. But we didn't receive even a reply, you know. They say, okay, they are crazy. Maybe
right,
they get drugs or they drank.
They just didn't acknowledge it. Yeah. Wow. Now, do you keep in contact with anyone else who is on the craft with you?
No. We are.
That's an amazing story, Stefanos. That's a really amazing story. Well, I want to thank you so much, Stefanos, for taking the time to not only share that story, but to talk about your book, The Road to Pascagoula, A Research Trip, 1981, which was published. It just came out, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, the 1st of November.
And
it's only on in a Kindle and paperback on Amazon. It's very cheap, and you can buy it. And you read many, many, many fantastic things up there. Even Calvin Parker had an idea about this. He didn't know nothing. So I was very lucky. I was very lucky because I put some more clues to this story and make the story much harder.
Well, I think what you did is great. Going and doing the research just, 8 years later and getting in touch with people who have had the chance to think about it, to calm down about it when the media kind of moved on. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And actually get these exclusive interviews with people, and even getting that exclusive third person perspective.
Yeah.
And thankfully you shared Greek heritage with them. So that means it was a sign, I think.
Yeah, there are many photos in the book. The readers, they will see all these persons. I talk about you, Mr. Sigalas and the Greek Makis and Don Broders and the family of Hickson and Hickson himself and all this stuff. They will enjoy it. If they read it, they will enjoy it. They will know much more things that they think they knew about this thing.
I'm going to put a link to the Amazon page as well as your published page, Flying Disc Press. which I believe is Philip Mantle's website. But I'll put a link to all of that. And Stefanos, I really appreciate your time. Author Stefanos Panagiotakis, I really appreciate it. And you're welcome anytime back, please. And you speak excellent English, so don't be too hard on yourself.
I'm very embarrassed about this because I have some...
Get out of here.
No, this is recorded, but the next time I have with some podcast with which going to be live, and I don't know what... I explain to them that this is me. Okay, you can accept me. You must... you try to understand me. You ask me slowly. Your questions must be slowly to understand and not have... I beg your pardon, repeat... Thank you very much, Mark, for inviting me here. I'm very glad I met you. And, thank you very much.
Is there enough on your mind? Is there enough?